When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Who Got the Assist in the aftermath of the final game before we head off into international break. Game week 5, a mere speck on the horizon. Thankful respite for some, spoiler like me, whose start has been a tad underwhelming, while others will be happy wanting to keep their momentum going. I'm Tom. I'm here with a beer as usual and ready more than anything to look ahead. Unfortunately, it's just the two of us this week. You may have heard a third team member in the background last week, but she's been a bit grumpy today, so she's gone off to bed a little bit earlier. So hopefully there'll be no kind of background music of a baby wailing. She's doing fine otherwise. Joined by Sam, though. Slightly more insight than my daughter, perhaps. You're right.
I hope so, although probably not too much. Maybe about the same amount of whining, considering the game weeks we've had recently. But yeah, all good. I'm looking forward to the international break. It feels like it's actually been quite a long time since we've had a break from FPL. Obviously, the build-up was a month, and then we're a good month into the season now as well. So I feel like I need a little bit of an unwind. I'm darting off to Portugal for a couple of days over the weekend just to properly unwind and relax, and then yeah, hopefully I'll be back in a couple of weeks or in a few weeks recharged and ready to go again. But before that, we've got a game week to discuss, and of course we've got a lot of other potential topics to discuss this week. So as always, we are Who Got the Assist. On today's pod, contemplate this week, we'll be talking about the big question of whether we should all be staying patient, or potentially is it time to start panicking in the form of a wild card. The next thing is how best to attack the next block of fixtures. Obviously, a lot of us are potentially looking at wildcarding around game week 8 or 9 as well, if not now. So the next block of fixtures will be really important to try and set us up for the short term. And then also, can we even postpone the wild card looking at the fixtures ahead as well? Finally, we're going to look at bold claims again and have the listener questions. No spoilers on the bold claims this week, but Tom and I are getting less and less bold by the week, I feel. So you can probably tell how it's going. And listener questions, we'll have a few of them to go through before we wrap up the pod with looking ahead. Obviously, we're a couple of weeks out, so it'll just be a light look at how our teams are set up for game week 5 at this point. We're recording on Monday, the 4th of September, so the game week is over and out. And yeah, let's take a look at the team, shall we? So I think, I can't remember which one I've put up first on the slides. It's you, Tom. So would you like to go through your team for game week 4 for the listeners?
Time honored tradition, the lowest scorer goes first. yeah, 72 for me, a red arrow again, down to 1.3 million now. Haaland scoring more than the rest of my team put together, the captaincy on him, of course. So 40 points from him, 32 points from the ragtag rest. And yeah, not the best week in the world. New signings, Foden and Sterling came in. Foden got the assist.
He said it.
And Sterling blanked, following a long tradition of the highest bought man and proceeding to blank, although Nicholas Jackson did his very, very best. He must have not bought Sterling this week, that's for sure, given that miss towards the end of that game. And I think I transferred out Martinelli and Matoma, who both assisted. So that's the second consecutive transfer that I've made that has created negative points. Which is obviously lovely to see. it's all right. I mean, it is what it is. It can happen sometimes. I think a slightly kind of rescued a little bit by the last minute Bumo goal, which was a very good goal, actually. That turn, lovely. Yes, down to 1.3 million. And I did say on Twitter, oh, this is probably my worst. I couldn't remember a worse start. That's because I've got a memory of a goldfish. So last season, I was 185K at this point. So doing pretty well. Bring back Lucy, I say. The season before that, I was 350K. But the season before that, I was actually 1.8 million at this point. So 500K place is better off than a few years ago. The issue is that those two lower starts, I finished below 100K overall at the end of the season. So yeah, I'm hoping I don't replicate that given how the start's been quite slow. I mean, obviously there's like all the old kind of maxim that you're only kind of 20 points off the top 100K at this point, etc., etc. So I'm probably, we'll talk about it later, but I was kind of hovering over a wild card, and I've now kind of walked back from the brink a little bit now, and I'm willing to kind of just give it a bit more time. But yeah, obviously it's not been, you know, it's not been terrible as the start of the season, but it's definitely been sort of certainly below average in terms of what my expectations were, especially kind of framed by how I was doing at this point over the last couple of seasons. Sam, I think you slightly better me, didn't you, with Mr. Doggy, I think, being the key difference, given that Maddison and Bumo pretty much matched each other.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, Doggy with the 5 points and Maddison with 7. So one less than Bumo. Yeah, our teams aren't too dissimilar now. There are a couple of key differences. Obviously, I've got a Doggy rather than a 4.0. And I think Maddison at the moment is a player that you're looking at. I think Son, obviously, as well, at the moment is a player that a lot of people are looking at. That Spurs attack in general looks really good. So I'm happy to have Maddison. But overall, a bit like you, a frustrating game week. And for me, I don't know about you, but I knew it would be an annoying game week once the 3 PMs finished, because I had so much excitement built up in those three fixtures. All of the midfielders that I was excited about were playing at that time. Saka and Rashford, obviously, playing on the Sunday. I felt like they might cancel each other out a little bit. I wasn't expecting much. Rashford actually was a lot less owned than I thought he would be. So actually, that goal from Rashford did help. But
yeah, it did.
Sterling and Foden in particular, I was really excited to see how they got on with three players in the 3 PMs. And even though only two of the three returned, about 5 minutes from the end, I was really happy. Like, I was pretty happy. I was looking at live FPL, which I know I shouldn't do so early, but without the Mbeumo goal, everything looked rosy. And then obviously he had that turn, slotted it home, and everything just took a massive downturn from there. So I finished on 75 points, a few frustrations in the lineup, but I don't know for me whether I'm ready to start twitching just yet. I think this pod is going to be really, really helpful for me to see whether or not my team is in a worse state than I think it is, whether I'm in denial a little bit. I think I'm being slightly saved by the fact that my rank at the moment is just under a million. So I'm 950K. I think if you add 50K onto that, I'm starting to look at that and think, oh, 4 game weeks in, over a million, little bit annoyed about that. But obviously, like you mentioned, and it is cliche, as every pod and every YouTuber will say the same thing, but it is really close together at the moment. It's not like anyone stretched out a lead of 50 points over you in your mini leagues, or at least in most cases, it won't be anyway. So I think it's a couple of halls away from all balancing out. And I think I'm pretty happy with the players I've got in at the moment. So frustrating. And yesterday I was pretty annoyed, but in general, I'm not too panicky just yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one or two things that haven't quite gone the right way in terms of how this week has gone. Which I don't know. I think you're probably about five, six points ahead of me, and it's already you're already looking at an order of kind of 400K places, which kind of just shows everything really that it doesn't matter too much right now. And we'll talk about later on at what rank you may kind of be thinking, oh, okay, maybe it's time to hit that wild card, because this week it is on Contemplate all about that kind of difference between should we stay patient or should we panic. And I just got to say, we're obviously not saying you're actually panicking if you've wild card. We're not kind of denigrating you in any way. It's an homage to the Simpsons clip, you know. So, Professor, would you say it's time to panic? Yes, I would, Kent. But actually, it's kind of just kind of talking about whether, as Sam said, that cliche of kind of just staying patient, you know, sticking to the plan and not kind of wildcarding now, it's better than actually hitting the button and going for it. And we're going to try to give the most balanced view we can of the two. Safe to say that I don't think either of us will be wildcarding, just to put up there, but definitely be advocating for it and just trying to kind of ask the questions of ourselves regarding whether it is worth more of a look than perhaps we'd otherwise thought. If you watch on YouTube, a wildcard draft that I put together earlier on today is on the screen, but we'll talk about that in just a bit. And the first thing to do really, though, is go with the pro template argument, really, about wildcarding at this point. So we always end up saying, you know, obviously it's hugely team specific. We know that. But why, Sam, would you hold your wildcard now until later?
Yeah, so there are a couple of reasons I do try to hold my wild card a little bit longer. I have blown my wild card around game week 4 and 5 in the past. I think back before I started looking into the data quite so much and started appreciating what the data could mean, I was quite early on the wild card. I used it on gut, and there's nothing really against that view. It's worked out for me in the past, so I'm not in any way saying people can't do that. But the reasons against using it would be, one, because we don't really know what we don't know yet. We're 4 game weeks in. There's a lot of data circling around, but it's based all on a limited sample size. We're seeing moving parts all the time at the moment. So, for example, in game week 4, we saw Son shifted into centre forward for the first time. Will he stay there? Will he go back? Will Richarlison have something to say about that? And how will Brennan Johnson fit into the Spurs plans as well? All of these things will factor into whether he stays centre forward or not. And we've got a lot of other examples like that in the opening few game weeks where maybe one player, looking at you, Sterling, has performed really, really well in one game week. Everyone's excited by him, but it is just one game week. It is just a couple of game weeks so far. So how much can we trust this data, especially when it's players that have been unfancied previously, or in some cases, players that are completely new to the league? How confident are we of those players? The second reason would be because there are pretty opportune moments to wildcard, which we'll go into in a bit. But later on down the line, there are some fixture swings that look more obvious, let's say, than the fixture swings we're seeing in between game week 4 and 5. So a lot of our teams are actually on paper, as frustrating as the last couple of game weeks might have been for your team, I doubt on paper it looks like a bad side for game week 5 if you remove last week's points from your mind. Looking ahead, I am pretty happy with how it looks for game week 5. And then I'm also pretty happy with how it looks for 6, 7 and 8 at the moment, with a couple of tweaks here and there. So am I throwing the baby out with the bathwater a little bit by making those moves now and burning what is a really valuable chip when we've only got 2 of them this season? Obviously, any people who were new to it last season had the Christmas wild cards, well, in all but name anyway. So that was quite a nice saviour. Whereas now we might be looking at our next wild card somewhere around February, March. And that's a long time to wait without having a wild card up your sleeve.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll leave the opportune moments to wild cards a little bit later on, as you mentioned. I do like the we don't know, channeling your inner Donald Rumsfeld there, unknown unknowns. But yeah, I think that kind of opens a bit of an interesting sort of binary to me between, are we reacting if we're wildcarding now, or are we making reasoned judgments? That's kind of one of the things that, for example, in the wildcard that I've got on the screen, for those not watching on YouTube, there's no Sterling in that, which is a good example of that. Because I perhaps if I was wildcarding now, I'd remove him because he's blank last week, and maybe I want Son instead. And then that kind of creates a whole load of different avenues. And if you are in the situation, and I appreciate there's some huge problems who've probably already pulled the pin. So if you're sat there with, I don't know, Richarlison, you've got Gabriel, and you've caught several of the injuries floating around, like the likes of Reece James, and you've kind of limped through to now, you know, one, well done. And two, I probably would be with you and thinking, well, you know what? You know, I've got 4 or 5 changes to make here, probably. I can kind of optimize elsewhere. So maybe that's kind of one where I kind of think, yeah, okay, there's quite a lot of dead wood to set adrift. Mm. But I mean, I think that most of our squads, now I've kind of walked away from my disappointment a little bit at the end of last game week. I don't think they're really in the radical overhaul stage. It's more of kind of a course correction to a smaller or greater degree. Like, cast your mind back to pre-game week one, which is not very long ago. Like, we were all salivating over how good a team you could pick. And I said at the end of the pricing pod that it's nigh on impossible to pick a bad team.
Like, yeah.
Any of the players currently in and around the template that are currently on chopping blocks or recently have been, you know, the likes of Martinelli, Matoma, Rashford, none of them are especially bad, as you all know. So, I mean, a wild card now would, because we don't know very much, as you said, Sam, it feels to me, the more I've looked at it, that you're just kind of wildcarding to the template, which is okay. And if you're kind of stuck, and we'll talk about this in a second, but if you're right down and you're kind of thinking, you know what, I just need to kind of recover this a little bit, make up kind of 20, 30 points pretty quickly, I think that there's more of a justification there. But most of us can probably manage our way through the next little while, even if you haven't started as well as you like. Like, no, I think the point that you've made about readjusting to the fact we don't have that sort of second checkpoint that kind of breaks up the season, like, it's something to really, really think about, because there's always going to be a worse situation for many of us. And those who have flirted with a wild card after an unsatisfactory start, you look at it and you think, yeah, you know, I could wild card now, but who, you know, there's always going to be a worse situation in this stretch, H1 of the season. It's one where, you know, I've kind of really looked at it last night. I was really thinking about it, and when we go to contemplate, I'll kind of make the case for doing that. So swap sides, as it were. but I don't know, like, does that make sense? And kind of what OR would you need to be, do you think, Sam?
I was wondering about this in the setup to the pod, and I find it hard to say that there's any sort of particular OR where I'd say definitively, yeah, I would hit the wild card. It's more about the situation you're in. How many players do you have any confidence in? How far behind the template are you at the moment? And which players are immediate fires in your side? So if you've still got the likes of Richarlison, if you've got João Pedro, maybe less of a fire now, but still, I think a player that probably needs to go eventually. Gabriel as well at the back. Maybe you're sick of Jordan Pickford, for instance, after one too few clean sheets in the last few games. There are issues that if you've got a combination of those issues and you can see five or six changes to your starting 11 that you can pretty much put your hand up and say those will inevitably score me net positive points for the next four or five game weeks in a row, that's probably when I'd look at doing it. Now, obviously, if that is the case in your team, it's quite likely that your rank is a bit lower at the moment because you've hit a lot of bad luck with these players all at once. So if you've got the combination of players I've just said, for instance, you're probably around 3 or 4 million. And it's not so much the rank I'd be looking at when wildcarding, because like we mentioned, just to hit the cliche again, the points are still pretty tight at the moment. It's more about how many points are we going to continue losing and leaking every single week if you don't hit that wild card? And could that 30-point deficit be an 80-point deficit in four or five game weeks whilst you're still scrambling to try and catch up with the template with only one free transfer every week to do it? That's quite a difficult thing to do if you're five or six players behind that template or behind what you consider to be the next growing template. So, yeah, I think if you're around 3 or 4 million and you look at your team and you think I'm five or six moves back here of the starting 11, I wouldn't worry so much about the bench. Then I would probably look more closely at a wild card and think to yourself that maybe it could just keep leaking points at this rate. And maybe it's just let's plaster this up and worry about the next problem when it comes and hope that the wild card solves the immediate problem.
Yeah, I mean, if you're 3 million, for example, you're 20 points off 1 million. If you're 1 million, you're 25 points off the top 100K, which means if you're 3 million, you're therefore 45 points off the top 100K. So that's one where if you're 1 million, okay, you can probably sort of relax a bit. If you're 3 million, that's beginning to get, you know, you're going to have to take a few punts, really, and hope for those sort of low-owned hauls to really kind of drive home the difference for you. So maybe if I was kind of around 3 million now, I would probably be thinking I'd do it, to be honest.
Do you reckon? That's really interesting. I'm not sure I would panic at even 3 million. 45 points to me seems like just over a point a game week. So yeah, I don't see that over the course of the season, though, right?
And that's also assuming that everybody else in front of you keeps moving at the same rate. So you've just discussed, and you basically answered Bryn's question, how many moves justify a wild card? So if you are 3 million, you can kind of feasibly assume that either you've got mad negative variance or bad luck, as normal people would call it, or you are quite a few players behind the template in a few areas. Like maybe you've kind of followed your gut on a few players and done a few different things to the rest of the crowd and it's not worked for you. Maybe that would be a time when you kind of think, you know what, I'm at this rank because my squad needs surgery. Therefore, it kind of follows that, you know, all of the stars align a bit more. It's when you're in that sort of messy middle point, I think, when you start where I am and where you are, where it's kind of, it's not as clear. And a lot of it comes back to what I said earlier about, you know, if you're not going to be radically, I guess it's, what do you want to do when you wildcard? Do you want to be in the position where you're radically overhauling your squad? Or do you want to be making a minor course correction with the wildcard? I think with just two of them, especially now, I think there is sort of that feeling that I want to be wildcarding to make real big changes. I mean, even the wildcard that I've speculated on, the changes aren't that radical. It's only kind of bringing your doggy in, kind of moving the deck chairs around in terms of bringing in Bruno back, getting Son in over Foden, getting Alvarez in the attack. I mean, they're not kind of things which are going to be game ending, because players like I still own, like Watkins, Foden, Sterling, the players who I haven't named there who are currently in my team, could just as easily match the guys who I would be bringing in. Exactly. I feel like it's very kind of it is a reactive wild card, and I think that if you are wild carding now, that it's about acknowledging that and not kind of thinking about that negatively. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm trying to do something to make everything sort of happen for me and kind of just set myself up going forward, because it can kind of work. It's just one of those where I kind of look at it and think, hey, you know, whatever. And yeah, you know, if you are doing well, then there's kind of bit that the question's neither here nor there, really. And we'll kind of definitely address you guys in just a bit. I know there's obviously quite a lot of you who are doing a lot better than we are.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And just a final point, just to be completely clear to anyone listening, and maybe I didn't put my point across correctly. It's not so much like I wouldn't wildcard at around 3 or 4 million rank. It's the points I wouldn't be so concerned about at this point. It's more if you're 5 or 6 moves behind and you think that points margin is going to keep stretching over the next few game weeks, which obviously goes kind of hand in hand at that sort of rank. It's likely that you've got a few players that are issues in your squad. So I would look at that first rather than the points itself and think I need to radically overhaul because the points are a bit down or 45 points down, for instance. But yeah, if you're at 3, 4, 5 million, then I'd have a look at your side and just think, how many moves would I realistically want to make on a wild card? And would that definitely, or as close to definitely as possible, make a positive change to my side for the next 4 or 5 weeks?
Certainly. I think it's interesting, isn't it? So advantages of wildcarding, if you're a bit behind the template, as we've sort of intimated, you can tidy up and get yourself sort of caught up. It's also kind of the well-wrought idea of compound differentials. So there's lots of template players, but kind of the scarcity of the players being owned increases if you consider combinations. So people who don't own one player plus players who own 2, player 3, 4, 5. So the more players that you own as a unique combination to you, obviously there's those people who do have your exact squad because this is FPL 2023, but that kind of be a bit of a positive. And I suppose, you know, that there's also this idea of max value. Like that's how I always kind of keep track of when I wildcard. Like you kind of build a team which is at 0.0, basically the best team you can possibly build, and think, all right, this is likely to be unaffordable in a few weeks' time if things go as I think they're going to go. Is this good enough? Do I get that sort of, I don't know, it's a bit kind of wishy-washy, but I get that sort of feeling that this is the wild card that I want to go with. And I built a max value wild card and it didn't really feel that way to me thus far. So just to talk you through what that looked like, it was removing Onana and putting, you know, 4.5 million goalkeeper in Leno, keeping Turner, keeping Chilwell, Estupiñan, removing the 4.0s for Udogie and Botman, and I'd had to go from Saliba down to Zinchenko to make this all work. Removing Foden for Son, keeping Bumo, Rashford and Saka, bringing in Bruno for Sterling, and then Haaland, Alvarez and Archer as the front three, which is, again, that's a really good team, but it's not, you know, it's not radically worlds and worlds away from my team. And my team could just as easily perform okay next week and beat this team. Whereas I think, yeah, you know, if I wild card in a few weeks when the fixture strings are a lot more in focus, as you mentioned earlier on, Sam, I did kind of think that, yeah, after sleeping on it, I did kind of rethink it and think, hey, it's not too terrible at the moment, that's for sure. So, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I think that there are definitely advantages for wildcards, and it's always circumstantial based on you. It's just at the moment, I just don't think it's quite the right thing to do for me. And you know, I'm not ruling out wildcarding game week 5 to 6. I mean, it could happen where I end up with a couple of injuries, or you know, I have another massive red and the template has just completely run away from me, and I need to kind of start buying in really, not really punty players, but players who will take me a bit of restructuring. So a Salah, for example, if I decide, you know what, I'm just going to go to Salah and completely restructure my team, that would require a wild card, I think, in my mind. A good question here from Joshua Biggs, just to finish round off this session. In a hypothetical wild card team, who are the three musts and the three to avoid, barring Haaland, of course?
That is a difficult one. Yeah, so obviously barring Haaland, I think musts, it needs to be one of the Tottenham mids, I think, for me. I don't know whether it'd be Son or Madison. I'd actually probably favour Madison at this point as a must on a wild card. Everything does seem to be still going through him. And Son, obviously very explosive, but we've only seen that in one game week so far. So it still feels, I don't know, there are people who will say he's absolutely nailed centre forward now because of that performance, and it'll continue in that way. And I can definitely see it happening. If I was given a free wild card to use now and I had to use it now, Son would probably also be in it. But I think Madison's the one that's just going to keep ticking over. We have full confidence in his position in the team and what he's going to do week in, week out. So I'd probably put him there. Saka would probably be the second one in my mind, because again, underlying data so far is fantastic. He is on the majority of penalties, it looks like. And Arsenal are still a fantastic attacking outfit. I think he's got 3 returns so far as well in 4 games, which is not bad whatsoever. All of the data suggests he's a good pick. So at 8.6 million, still very happy to have him. And then finally, that's where the third spot for me is really tough. Now, Fernandes has a shout. Possibly if you're on a wild card, then maybe you look at a Liverpool attacker like Salah, for instance, if he stays, which I'm assuming he will. But if a 200 million bid comes in, then who knows? Then because you're wild carding to get ahead of people, Salah feels like a pretty essential person to bring in to make that difference in your team. Obviously, we're looking at a wild card without him at the moment. That might be under the assumption that he is going to be off to Saudi Arabia. But if he stays, if you're wildcarding, for me, he would be that kind of essential glue in your side to make sure that you are making enough of a difference to your team and having that upside over anyone who wouldn't be on a wildcard. Should we go through the three musts first and then move on to the ones to avoid?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I definitely had super fun times at Spurs, that's for sure. And 4 for non-Pen XG. I've got an eye on Son just because of having a bit of a subpar start. I do think that the cases, and we'll make it onto this a bit later on maybe, I think the cases of Sterling and Son are perhaps a tiny bit different, just because Son, when he was wide, is one thing, but Son, when he's in the middle, is an EV gem waiting to be taken. And yes, I know there's going to be naysayers when we come back to it in a couple of weeks saying, oh, but you've got no way of knowing that Son's going to stay in the middle. Well, I mean, to be honest, the dude's just got a hat trick playing through the middle. And the Spurs, to the eye, flowed. They were pairing pretty well, but replace Son, Richarlison with Son, and suddenly you've got a team which is looking pretty lethal. I'm not sure if that's going to be lost on Postecoglou either. Maybe it's, I'm not by no chance managers and anyone near the level of expertise, but you know, it feels a bit kind of overthinky to me. And people start to, when that argument will start inevitably being deployed. Second one, Mbeumo. Third with Jackson for non-Pen XGI. This season thus far is just Rashford, just Haaland, and I think it's Bruno ahead of him. And yes, really surprised me actually. I was fairly lukewarm on him pre-season, but really surprised me. And I think one that I kind of just have in, I know it's Newcastle next. I know that can be a convenient way to kind of think, oh, yeah, I'm going to get rid of him, actually. But no, I'd stick with that. And one of Rashford or Bruno, I think I would go with. I would almost definitely just kind of stick Bruno in there and go for that. In terms of my avoid, Sam, they're a bit more kind of wishy-washy and not kind of individuals. I'd avoid Newcastle attackers for now. It's one that we need to wait on and see, just because we just don't know. There's so many Newcastle attackers who have got a competent replacement on the bench when Champions League kicks in, especially having especially with the adverse result against Brighton as well. There's so much scope for chopping and change there for Eddie Howe. And we don't know what the X-Mins are really with them. And although it's tempting, I wouldn't go there right now. The Man United defence, I'm not sure you would be thinking about them anyway, but definitely avoid a fifth from bottom for XGC right now, which is not good at all. And the other thing is kind of, again, a bit more kind of ephemeral, but just making too many planned transfers when you wildcard, it just never ends well in my experience. It never does. I think it's always better to kind of just assume that, you know, I'm just going to wildcard and this team would be fine for the next 5 weeks, and that, as we do at the start of the season, like, you know, you can buy in like your Awoniyi's and players like that because they've got a good fixture next up, but it may well be that something else crops up next week, and then kind of, you know, you're stuck with a player you didn't really want. You wanted for his one fixture, and then his sort of use for you is completely expended really quickly, but you've got to focus on other fires. So that'd be my three.
I'd probably just add to, I agree with all of those, by the way. I'd probably just add to the pile Gusto at Chelsea. Now, obviously, he's been very popular, still rising in price, but James is not far away now, and it looks like they might be targeting the end of the international break as a time to bring him back up to full fitness and then maybe integrate him back into the side in the next couple of game weeks. So I think you might get one or two games out of him still, but I think longer term, if you're wildcarding, you want players that, like you say, you're not booking a transfer for. And I think unless you've already got him, for me, I probably wouldn't be looking to bring him in. And also, obviously, Chelsea disappointed in game week 4, but they've still got good fixtures ahead. And do you want to lock yourself out from three starting Chelsea players in the next couple of game weeks? I'm not so sure you do. So I probably, not saying Gusto's been a bad pick or won't be for another game week or two, but it's for a wild card, a short-term view, and I think you can probably make some value elsewhere in the longer term.
Yeah, so that's probably a good overview, I think, of kind of the state of being for a lot of people at the moment and the state of FPL. Like, could you wild card right now? You could, but there's a lot of kind of issues probably which maybe obstructs the clear yes that we may get later on, which we're going to move on to now. So the idea of attacking the block. So over the course of the season, especially in the early season, you've got the international breaks, which break up the FPL calendar into 4 week blocks. The next 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I didn't mean to break into steps there. I'm sorry. The next 4 are all there for us to see on the screen, and we'll obviously speak over them in just a bit. And this idea of attacking the block may well help you, especially if you're looking to wild cards, you know, next international break. So between game week 8 and game week 9, there are a lot of people who are looking to do that. Just because of game week 8, there's one significant game, which is Man City versus Arsenal. However, I think at the start of the season, we were all thinking, you know what, I'm going to stick to my triple Arsenal, wait up until game week 8. In vogue at the moment, especially last week, it was selling Martinelli for another. So maybe it's just a case of having two. Maybe they just have Haaland as well. So maybe it's not as clear. But I think that does present, if you're looking to wild cards in game week, after game week 8, so between game week 8 and 9 over the next international break, it does kind of give you a bit of a clearer plan of what you could possibly do over the next few weeks, and certainly something that I'll be looking at too. So you could, for example, target Luton and Burnley. And so you could look at, you know, in game week 5, Forest have got Burnley, so you know, you could buy Morgan Gibbs-White. I'm not sure I want to buy Fulham player versus Luton. Maybe Andreas Pereira. In game week 6, you know, you've got Man United versus Burnley. So, you know, maybe that could be a time to bring Bruno back for us, or bring in Rashford, or do something else. Game week 7, Newcastle.
Hoyland.
Burnley. Yep, Hoyland maybe. Mm. Game 7, Newcastle have Burnley. So maybe you have Gordon, Isak. And game week 8, you've got Spurs versus Luton and Chelsea versus Burnley. So a plethora of options there, especially if you wanted to hop off, I don't know, Saka or something for 1 week. and just go for hell for leather on those guys. But I think, you know, maybe that kind of idea of targeting the midfield for your transfers and continuing to kind of optimize your team surrounding those fixtures could be something you would do. And as you kind of get closer to wildcard time, when you know you're going to wildcard, you can get kind of incrementally more punty as it kind of goes along. I think that that's probably what I'm going to be doing. I'm not saying, obviously, I'm going to be buying Brennan Johnson in game week 8 versus Luton right now, but I could be. Because maybe he'd be the low-owned guy that could really go off. But yeah, but there's quite a lot to make of that sort of idea of just attacking the block, I think, Sam. And I think it could kind of help kind of focus your mind a little bit, especially if you kind of say, right, I'm not wildcarding now. If you are wildcarding now, I think that's probably still quite useful because you can kind of see over the next kind of 4 weeks how things could develop and where you might want to kind of focus your transfer energy after game week 5. But what do you make of all this? And is there something that you'll be looking to do around this?
Yeah, so at the moment, I am looking at either wildcarding in game week 8 or 9. At the moment, for me, it's looking more likely in between 8 and 9, so ahead of game week 9. The reason being is because I'm already fairly well set up with those Spurs assets against Luton. I've got 2 out of 3 and I'm happy with the 2 I've got as well. So I don't really feel like I necessarily need to wildcard in game week 8 to get to extra Spurs players. Obviously, if I wildcard in game week 8, their fixture run is fantastic. It's Luton, Fulham, Crystal Palace. So that's a great run to hop onto. But because I've already got 2 of them anyway, I'm probably fairly happy with that. And then there's a few other little fixtures dotted here or there. Aston Villa, for instance, go up against Wolves in 8, West Ham 9, Luton 10. So if you've already got Aston Villa players now, you can probably look at bolstering that around game week 8 or 9. But is it worth a wild card in game week 8 if you've already got one, let's say a Diaby or a Watkins by then? We've both got Watkins in our side. I don't know whether he'll survive until game week 8 at this point, but... He's in the side at the moment. And if he stays in my side around game week 8, that's another player with a good fixture in game week 8. I probably don't need to wildcard at that point. There are fixture turns around the game week 9 point, which is why I'm so tempted to do it ahead of game week 9. And then also you've got the international break to catch those price rises, which I think are a little bit overplayed, but it's still nice to have 2 weeks to plan and to think through everything you want to do. And the most essential one that I can see on this grid that we've got in front of us is the Liverpool swing. So in game week 9, they hit Everton at home, followed by Nottingham Forest and then Luton. That is a ridiculously good run of fixtures. And like we sort of briefly mentioned earlier, a wild card seems to be in this season when you've only got 2 of them for more fundamental changes to your squad structure. And I'm looking at Mo Salah at that point. If he's still in the league and if he's still performing anywhere near the level we know he can, then that could be a complete template buster using it in game week 9 to maneuver into a 2 premium draft from a 1 premium draft can really save you from having to shuffle 2 big players in your side around and taking a hit to do so and actually balancing out your squad structure for the weeks ahead without having to take any of the hits as well. And you can bring in 1 or 2 Liverpool players. You can have the Aston Villa players. You can have the Spurs players. And Chelsea, I think, are a team that a lot of us will be piled up on. Their fixtures run out in game week 8 and game week 9, they run into some really bad ones. So in my team, it looks like a game week 9, but I can look at the fixtures here and see if you've got no Aston Villa, if you've got no Spurs, if you're piled up on Chelsea at the moment, there's a lot of reasons you could look at wildcarding in game week 8, but you've got to look at your own side and figure out how desperate you'll want it by that point.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, you can't oversell how bad the run is after game week 8. Arsenal, Brentford, Spurs, City, Newcastle, Brighton, Man United. And that is horrendous, frankly. I know you could think, oh, I'm going to keep this guy, he's done well for me. But removing those players are going to be the key to basically enabling picks like Salah. That plus City have Arsenal, Brighton, Man United. Yes, okay, they are always the bad fixture, but you maybe want to go down just to Haaland for that. And Arsenal play City, Chelsea, and Newcastle in 3 of their 4 fixtures. Again, they are the bad fixture apart from 4 for City. So I think that that's definitely a way to do it. However, if you did wildcard now, or you were kind of thinking about who you're going to buy next, or if you were thinking about where my team does land, it's notable that, as you mentioned, Spurs, for example, yes, you know, they've got Arsenal and Liverpool in 6 and 7. But those are both games where, given how Spurs are playing at the moment, and also, especially in Liverpool's case, Arsenal are actually doing pretty well in terms of XGC. But in Liverpool's case, there's going to be chances available, and there are feasibly quite a few players who you could buy and own, you know, from now onwards. So Liverpool, yes, they do run into good fixtures coming up, but they're not especially terrible, you know, over the next few. Wolves, West Ham, Spurs and Brighton. Wolves and aren't quite the proposition they were a few years ago. West Ham obviously are duking it out with Man City at the top of the league. And so that could be an interesting one. But Salah's got a very good record against West Ham, I kind of think at the top of my head anyway. Spurs and Brighton are not games that I'd be too concerned about fielding an attacker in. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, it's an okay kind of jump off point, but you could feasibly manage your way through the next few weeks by just attacking the block. As I said last week, I think there's definitely a strategy that you could possibly follow at the moment of just leaving that defence and leaving that strike force to just sort itself out. I know Watkins, for example, has been poor, Sam, but what do you think his non-pen XGI is? Where do you think he ranks at the moment in terms of Premier League players?
Oh, in terms of like overall ranking, just for strikers or in terms of all Premier League players?
All players, where do you think he is?
I'm going to say around 30th.
He's fifth.
Wow, really? That's crazy. What's his underlying?
A 3.1 non-pen XGI.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm definitely holding him then.
I had to reload FBref about 4 or 5 times just to be completely sure.
And that's actually really blown my mind. I thought he'd be way lower than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's loads of players who are going to be cut. You know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier on, what with the wildcard thing. It's a case of reacting versus having that sense of reason judgment. And yeah. I think it's kind of the handover, I suppose, between, yes, we just reacted to the last game week, when we can kind of start to point at this season's data and think, you know what, okay, there's a discernible trend going on here. And we may see, and I know, yes, Watkins is fifth, but sixth is Abdoulaye Doucouré from Everton.
Bye.
So there is going to be a lot of noise in the data that you see, but after a little while, you get to the point where, you know, by game week 8, I think that we probably will be able to kind of see the green shoots of trends and be able to think, yeah, okay, that's okay. But for the short term, there are good fixtures for loads of teams out there. And I think that's kind of, you know, worth holding on to and worth thinking about. And there are loads of effective ways to attack this kind of next block of fixtures. Like, for example, this week, next week now, I'm probably going to be just giving up on Mr. Foden for a Spurs player. Probably between Son and Madison, probably Son for me, just because there's a Sheffield United game. It's the Arsenal game, which is always going to be, given how Spurs are playing, quite contentious. And I do think that there's going to be goals in that. Liverpool and then Luton. And it's one of those where I kind of look at those and think, oh God, you know, I'm really exposed without a Spurs midfielder at the moment. And you know, you can attack the block that way. And if you are moving towards a wild card, I mean, in game week 8 or game week 9, you can just kind of think, all right, I'm going to use one transfer every week, or use one role, use two. You do a 1 week punt in game week 8 and then kind of roll into the 9. It just kind of gives that structure, which I really like over the next few weeks. Not the structure that we saw at the end of last season, where it was kind of like, it was just plainly obvious what we were going to do because it was dictated by doubles. But we have that kind of ability to just feel like you know what you're going to be doing. And even if you're not wildcarding now, you can at least kind of have a better idea if you look over the next 4 weeks where your team is. Look on FPL.team and see how it's going to look over the next 4 weeks. You can kind of quite effectively figure things out because it just kind of takes a chunk of the season and it kind of helps you to think, how am I going to optimize that chunk of the season? I'm hoping that by the time I do wildcard, I'd have got my rank from 1.3 million to 300k. That's kind of where I'm hoping that I'm going to get to. But we'll see. I mean, that's kind of, you know, how you can go. It's a good thing to do rather than looking over the course of the season and thinking, oh, there's a long way to go. It's kind of quite useful to be able to kind of say, right, okay, there's a short space of time here within which I can do stuff. How am I going to attack the next kind of few fixtures and how am I going to make that work for me?
Yeah, completely agreed. And looking at the next four or five fixtures in a block, as the name of this section mentions, there are some notable teams like Newcastle, like Man United, like Liverpool as well, decent fixtures, and even Aston Villa as well, potentially. And then obviously you've got the teams like Spurs as well that have two promoted teams in the next four. These are all teams that if you've got a couple of players from already, you're probably okay for the next few game weeks. And if you don't, maybe just attacking those teams for the next few, prioritizing any transfers on just players from those teams with the fantastic next four fixtures, knowing you're going to wildcard in game week 8 or game week 9, then you can really start narrowing in on which are the punts that you want to go for the upside in the short term with very little consequence, because you're going to be wildcarding out of it in 4 weeks.
Perfect. So I think there's definitely a lot of discussion that we've had about kind of the state of where you are at the moment. Like doing well, then just keep driving home that advantage. Doing meh, well, I think that there's definitely a structure in place over the next kind of 4 weeks to try to re-engage and re-energize your season. And if it's not worked, you know, and you're still meeting those red arrows despite having, you know, loads of negative variants or bad luck, then maybe you want to consider wildcarding sooner. But it does seem like that there is definitely a kind of a feasible course over the next few. And if you have wildcarded now, it at least kind of gives you an idea of, you know, for 4 weeks, just try to focus your moves around certain teams. And if I was wildcarding now, it would very much be around having a midfield that I would be happy to kind of swap in and out, like interchangeable parts, whilst keeping the strike force and the defence pretty stable. Anything else on this, or should we move on to bold claims?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy to move on. Hopefully we've summed that up for you. If you haven't been able to see what we've been talking about and we haven't described it well enough, do check us out on YouTube, where we've had the fixtures up that illustrate our point a little bit over the last 20 minutes or so. So do check us out on YouTube if you get the chance. But for now, I think we're going to move over to bold claims, where we're still 1-0-0 by the looks of it. And the listeners are ahead of us both.
Yeah, so it wasn't a good week for anybody. We were all out by Saturday after 3 p.m. So the listener claim we went with was FPL Matt W. Bowen to outscore all the midfielders. And that did not happen, unfortunately, for Matt and those who went there.
It was a good shout, though.
It was a good show. And Ian Parrin, Planet Sky, also said 80% of the game week home fixtures would be home wins. Again, didn't quite pan out that way, unfortunately. Although he did get close. He did get pretty close, I've got to say. Next week, though, hopefully we're going to get off the boards that they are veering towards a shade of taupe, a shade of magnolia, unfortunately. But hey, here we go. But there is a fairly bold claim given the transfer market. In your first claim.
Yeah, so continuing the Spurs theme, and by the way, I do feel quite aggrieved not to have gotten the Richarlison goal in game week 4, considering his rival, his competitor for that spot, bagged a hat-trick. I think I'm going to take revenge this week. So I'm going to have a go at Son blanking in game week 5. Now, so far, as we alluded to earlier on in the pod, most of the most popular transfers in this season have weirdly gone on to blank the very next game week. So I think, even though I think there's a really good chance that he does score against Sheffield United on paper, that's a great fixture, I can just see it as another classic FPL thing where Son somehow inexplicably blanks against Sheffield United, despite playing up front, despite getting 3 or 4 XG per game. I can see it happening, and I'm going against the crowd and saying that Son is randomly and very unfortunately going to blank this week.
I can buy that, because I may well be buying him, and my luck is never good. I definitely expose myself unwittingly to the FPL gods at some point. They're taking offence. Oh, dear me. So yeah, mine is that there's 5+ goals in Man United versus Brighton. So, yes, pretty beige, let's face it. Man United, as mentioned earlier, 5th at the moment for XGC, as in not good, so 5th from bottom. And Brighton, 7th from bottom for XGC, 12.7. And so not much between the two of them. Both are performing fairly badly. You know, they're kind of joined by the likes of Bournemouth, Man United. Actually, Luton are performing better in terms of XGC than Brighton at the moment. So,
wow.
kind of underlines the fact that neither defence is watertight at all. So I'm going for 5+ goals in the Man United versus Brighton fixture. I'm still playing Estupiñán. So hoping he can actually do something attacking wise. But I think
it's got to be at least 3 of those goals, right?
Bags of goals in that game. I think that's going to be great fun. Although you do have 2 teams that are just hoping the other opposition kind of I think that's what I'm going with. Maybe we'll see the unstoppable objects meet the immovable force. Oh, that's the wrong way around. But never mind. You know what I mean? We'll see.
Cool. And so finally, we haven't asked for the listener bowl claims just yet. We'll put that out next week on X. So, and I am now just calling it X rather than Twitter because I'm bored of saying both of them. we'll put it out on X. So do keep an eye out for that and have a think over the next week or so as to what bowl claim can put us 2 down in the listener versus the WGTA host bowl claims quiz for 23-24. Shall we move on to some questions before we wrap up the pod?
Let's do it. So the man formerly known as Morpheus, given Brighton's XGC and United's decent fixture run after, are Rashford and Bruno solid holds going forward? Well, I think yes, obviously.
Yes, very much so.
I think that if I was wildcarding now, there'd be a huge temptation to have both of them. And those who have kept both of them obviously reap the rewards. Is that going to be the case that I'm going to want both of them back for that good run after game week 6? I mean, probably. I think it's going to be one where you'll have the Bruno sort of drums of war are going to be beating louder and louder between game week 6 and game week 9. They've got Brentford game week 8, which could be a little bit difficult. But Burnley in 6, Crystal Palace in 7, and Sheffield United in 9 before they hit Man City in 10. But again, really good fixtures after that: Fulham, Luton, and Everton. So I think you're probably going to be looking at doubling there. Hopefully, I'm going to. They'll probably both be a fixture of anyone wildcarding between game week 8 and 9. I think maybe it's going to be one of those where, think about the transfer sort of sequence I mentioned earlier on, you'll be looking to probably get another United player at some point, and maybe we'll be hoping that Hoyland puts his hand up. Although I'm still hoping that Ollie's going to
do something, anything.
Break the logjam, potentially. I was so disappointed. I just thought that Watkins would get something out of playing against that Liverpool, kind of a patched up Liverpool backline without Van Dijk, which is, they were bullied against Liverpool. So, there you go. I thought Gomez and Matip would give him opportunities, which didn't happen. So,
one thing with Villa is every game's a fun game. That is one thing I will give them. There's not been a poor game involving Villa so far this season. They either get hammered or hammer. So, I'm still fairly happy owning Watkins, especially with the data you showed me earlier today, which I'm quite surprised about.
I think that also answers Addy Brin's question about dropping Watkins to get double city forwards. Is that a good idea? I mean, actually, no, it doesn't answer that question. It's an interesting one, though, on the subject of Watkins. I mean, if that helps you do other things and reorient, I mean, would you be open to the idea of getting Alvarez in now?
Yeah, I'd be open to it. I think if I had Foden, which in my case I do, I probably wouldn't be tripling up on the attack at the moment. And it feels like eventually Alvarez and Foden are going to be competing for a spot at certain times. So I'm not sure I'd have both of them alongside Erling Haaland, although for the very, very short term, it might be a good way of playing it because it looks like for the time being, they're both playing still. But once Doku and Nunez and Bernardo Silva's back in as well, and all of these players are integrated, there will be some sort of shared minutes. I think with Alvarez as well, one thing I've noted in a couple of different bits of content already this week is Argentina go up away against Bolivia. In Bolivia on the Tuesday, the 12th of September, which is fairly early in the international break. It's still 3 or 4 days before he'll be back home and training and ready for a match. But that's 5,000 metres altitude as well, and players historically struggle quite a bit in that. So just one to keep an eye on. I'm not going to say that he's going to be benched in Game Week 5, but I think it's something to keep an eye on. And I think if you've already got a double up in City attack, I probably wouldn't triple. Yeah. But I don't mind using it. If you don't already have Foden, downgrading a Watkins or a Jackson as well Could be a good way, saving some money to get to Alvarez, and his underlying data looks great. And for the foreseeable future, he's starting. So yeah. You can't really drop him unless he gets injured or has Bolivian altitude sickness. So we'll see.
I don't really buy all the international break. Yeah, buts. I mean, saw it last year. I think it was Estepinian was playing on Thursday night at 2 a.m.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, how is he going to come back and, you know, play on Saturday at 3 p.m.? And everyone's kind of thinking, oh, you know what? My brother's sister's friend's colleague is Ecuadorian as well. And she says it's a horrible flight. But yeah, but you know, these footballers are not flying back in, you know, economy, are they? They're flying back on a private jet. Are going to have like a really rigorous and regimented plan to deal with, in Alvarez's case, how he deals with the altitude and then comes back to perform with Man City. It's not like there's going to, you know, it's going to be like us, like packed off on holiday, see a few llamas, play a game of football and blow in within 5 minutes and off he comes again. It's a very different scenario to, you know, the context that you see yourself in. So yeah, there'll be a lot of this over international break. I'm not speaking on you there, Sam, but there'll be loads.
No, not at all.
And it's always a case of just ignoring it, because it's almost always just nonsense. Like, if a player gets injured, then fair play. I mean, you can't really argue with that. I think we saw a few years ago that a player, I forget who, was injured. I think it was Sadio Mane. And a few people were kind of like, oh, yeah, but what do the Senegalese doctors know? And it was very kind of like, oh, God. So, yeah, there's lots of kind of conspiracy theories and people kind of acting like they know what they're talking about. Ignore international break. I don't know. I think Watkins we're in proper ketchup bottle territory. I'm determined to get a goal from him, Sam. If I do wild card in game week 8, or 9, and he's not scored, I think I can just count myself ridiculously unlucky. Basically.
Yeah, 8 games without a goal would be ridiculous, especially with a player with a team set up to get him goals, basically, as well, and the data to support it. He's got to score eventually. He's got to. But how long is too long? That's the question.
I know.
Alvarez is scoring right now and scoring for fun and assisting Haaland as well. So, yeah, I definitely wouldn't go against making that move, but I think just because I've already got Foden, I'm not personally eyeing it up myself, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't.
Yeah. FPL fail, John. Liverpool have a pretty good run of fixtures up until game week 12, which we've kind of noted already. Who other than Salah, he says, return big over this period? That's quite an interesting one. Any thoughts?
Darwin. Yeah, he's got to. The fixtures coming up, again, I think favour Darwin as well. There's not so much pressing required in the next two. And then hopefully he's in good enough form by that point to be, in inverted commas, undroppable going into the Brighton Spurs games, which, again, in fairness, they're both quite leaky defences. And I think throwing in an agent of chaos such as Darwin, it's quite likely that he plays or starts in one of those matches as well. So I think Darwin could be a really good shout. It's just, how confident are we at this point that he will continue to start? He's looked really good though. And I think if one or two more good performances in a row, and he's probably nailed down the striker slot for the foreseeable future. Obviously, Trent's always going to be there and thereabouts as well. So keep an eye on him. He looked like back to his old Trent best in the Villa game as well. So, yeah, he could be a player that maybe we're scrambling to try and squeeze in at some point this season as well. And with the fixtures coming, could be a player to keep our eyes on. But yeah, the other outside punt might be Szoboszlai as well. Like, he's getting into quite decent positions. Yep. He won't be anywhere near as effective as a Salah or a Trent or a Nunez, but he is lower priced. And I think, is he 7 million or 6.9 now? Might have had a drop. So I'd need to double check that. But yeah, he does have historically half decent data. So I wouldn't hate the idea of looking at him, but I think I'd need to see a bit more first.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was playing off one of the wings, actually.
Possibly, that could
maybe
be true.
Maybe it's one you'd look at. I mean, he will tick over fairly well, I think, given the player that he seems to be. It's probably potentially more assists and kind of long shots sort of thing for him. But playing in that advanced state, yeah, there's always a decent enough chance. It's just, I think that there's definitely some positive praise to be given to FPL here a little bit with Salah and the price, just because he is a question. I'm not sure whether it's kind of intentional, but he is now a question about whether you include him or not. I mean, who knows, by the time that this pod gets to 2 weeks' time, we may have gone to Saudi Arabia, but it doesn't sound like it's going to happen. And there will come a time when that's needed. And maybe that becomes kind of the main impetus to wildcard, because you've got to then reorient your team around that. So removing the likes of Sterling, obviously, because of bad fixtures. Maybe you kind of think, you know what, I'm going to do without one of the United guys. Maybe even just sack off Saka and just go, you know, right, okay, I'm going to have Salah, I'm going to have Diaby because Villa got a good run. Maybe keep Mbeumo, maybe keep Madison, and kind of just kind of slightly rejig everything around that. Maybe even kind of go for a 4-5-1 or something. Just have Mr. Archer as being your sort of, you know, your first bencher effectively. So I think, you know, you're paying the premium of Salah for that kind of certainty of starts. And I think probably, you know, see what happens with Darwin, see what happens with Jota the Slotter. Luis Diaz has started 3 of Liverpool's 4. Done okay, been a fairly good player. Last year, obviously, he was injured for a fair bit, but was pretty electric when we did own him. Started per 90 okay from memory. So I think it's one of those where, okay, the next three or four, they're okay. I mean, they're not like, you know, knock your socks off great. As I said earlier on, I'd have no worries. If I did own Salah now, I'd just obviously keep him there. But the next four, especially with ownership and everything, and all eyes of people making transfers elsewhere, they are a very good sort of monitoring period for Liverpool, because if we are planning to wildcard in game week 9, when they hit Everton and Forest and Luton between 9 and 11, then these next four are a great time to just kind of see, hey, you know what, is Darwin, as you said, going to keep that slot and be Captain Chaos and become a great sort of 7.3 million foil to Salah, which means you don't have to own him? Do we see a player like, you know, like Luis Diaz coming into the picture a lot more for a couple of kind of double-digit returns? Or does Szoboszlai do a Madison effectively, and just kind of the observation may become that he just kind of starts just to tick over game after game, getting an assist, getting a goal here and there on a lot of set pieces, of course. So, I mean, I think it's one that I wouldn't be kind of jumping into right now. In answer to the question, John, but I think it's one that we kind of take advantage of the fact we can monitor them right now. And if you do really want to get ahead of the game, then take your pick. My pick would be Salah. It's just that the surgery required to do that would be a wild card. So yeah, if you're in a position where you can buy Salah now, then fair enough. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely treat it as a wait and see. It's kind of where I am at the moment. I appreciate that a lot of people kind of think, oh, you know, you've got to make a decision right now. Yeah, my decision would be wait and see. Nath Jacobson, is it ever worth a goalkeeper transfer? He says he's considering Onana to Areola to, I guess, free up some funds. His team that he sent through was pretty solid. I think he was on 2 free transfers as well. So it's a case where he's kind of thinking, you know what, is it something that you could possibly do? Obviously, wait for the national break, yada, yada, yada. But I mean, I've always historically, to great comedy amongst most of my friends, actually, been quite open to a goalkeeper transfer. And I think that, you know, there's definitely issues with Man United's defence at the moment. I mean, any team which ends up with Leicester's defence from 2020 as their defence in 2023 in a top of the table clash, you've got to ask questions. Really, lots of injuries, obviously, for United. Ten Hag throwing a wobbler, frankly, is always all you can describe that as. You know, questioning VAR, questioning if it was offside. Like, obviously, he knows it was offside, but just had to defend his team, whatever. So, in terms of Onana, yes, it's obviously one of those where you look at it now, 4 weeks later, 4 weeks down the line, and think, oh God, I mean, maybe I should have just gone with Flecken or something. But don't forget, you know, between game week 6 and game week 13, as we've mentioned, United's fixtures are pretty good. And you'd be hoping for a run of clean sheets there. Maybe it's kind of, you give him a bit of a stay of execution. But this week, if you do own Turner, I'd probably be playing Turner against Burnley. And leaving Inanna on the bench for that Brighton game, because I think that'd be goals either end. Is it ever worth goalkeeper transfer? Yes, absolutely. And if you do free up funds and you're not happy with a goalkeeper, you're happy everywhere else and you're having an amazing time, then fair play. It looks like Nate, you are having an amazing time. So yeah, very well done. If I really wish I was in the position, to be honest, a lot of from a position of envy, or I wish I was in the position where I had two free transfers, a great team, and all I, you know, Inanna's like a it's not even a fire, it's like kindling, you know, it's like a tiny sort of spark, but I you know, I'd love to be able to take him out. It's just, it's one of those where I'm kind of like, well, I've got loads of other transfers I could probably make first. So yeah, envy. But yes, it is always worth goalkeeper transfer, but it's probably one of the lowest priority transfers I can think of.
Yeah, agreed. Other than maybe a 4.0 bench option or something. But yeah, 100%. It's usually the lowest priority and it's the lowest consequence, or of the lowest consequence. So it's not so often you see it. But if your team is well set up, then by all means, yeah, go for it. No, I can't disagree with anything you've said there.
Cool. Final question this week from Dave Glass. Hi, Dave. For commiserations. He says, am I wrong to be considering Saka for captaincy versus Everton? Says he got burned this week by going with Bowen versus Luton rather than going with Haaland. I mean, it's just one of those really where I think we should just all have a great time in the fact that captaincy, those 50-50s, they're out of the game for a little while. We don't have to think of them for quite a while either. I mean, yeah, game week 8 is the time, so we don't have to worry about captaincy until next month at the very earliest. And, you know, I think then it becomes more of an interesting sort of period. I think against Arsenal in game week 8, that's going to be the one where we will look at it and think, oh, you know, can I captain elsewhere? So you've got, Liverpool versus Brighton, could there be goals in that if you're in Salah, for example? You've got Man United versus Brentford, and not the best game actually. You could kind of go rogue, captain Son versus Luton. You could captain Sterling or Jackson versus Burnley. There'll be more options there. But I don't know. Overall, I kind of think the captaincy is kind of, it's good to reduce randomness, as my friend FPL General always says. And the fact that captaincy can just be constrained left on Haaland, and you're probably going to always be all right. Is a good thing, I think. And just forget about that. Focus on your kind of gameful 10, as I call them.
Yeah, agreed. I think with Haaland at the moment, his record speaks for itself, and the fixture isn't anywhere near bad enough in my view anyway, to try and back against it. I don't think the odds of that succeeding are high enough for me to be tempted. There are higher risk takers than me in the game, but a lot higher. So there are people who will do it, and that's why his EO will be under 200%, but I don't think it'll be by much. So yeah, if you're going to go for it, then good luck to you, and absolutely will not tell you not to, but have a big sofa to hide behind during the West Ham game, because it's going to be a tough watch. But yeah, Saka, if Haaland was out of the game and Saka at home to Everton was the other option, then yeah, that's a great option in itself. It's just the other screaming option is 180% EO Erling Haaland on the form of his life yet again. So yeah, I'm not going to go against him this week.
Right. Nice way on to transfers and captains, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're starting off with your team this week. So I don't think you've made any moves yet. Are you planning on making any with the team that you've got up in front of you at the moment?
I am. I think I'm probably going to just swap Foden to Son this week, get in on the Spurs action. I think, again, this EO cowardice, and again, it's almost definitely going to go against me. But I think that it's probably a good time to, I think it's probably just, you know, the way to kind of start to think about how I'm going to try to get things moving. I think there's a lot of people who are going to have Madison now. His ownership's kind of approaching the 25% mark, I think, last time I checked. So it might be worth kind of getting in on Son, just kind of hoping that he is central. I mean, if Postecoglou does turn around in the press conference and says, oh, you know what, we played Son there because Richarlison had sort of issue or something like that, but we're going to kind of persist with Richarlison, and then maybe I'll revisit that and just get Madison in. But I'm kind of, the team's all right. I mean, it's not great to be playing Estupiñan. Like, obviously, I prefer a doggy. Do I want to take a -4? Almost definitely not, to make that happen. So I think we're kind of, it's one of those where I've looked at it shoved Son in on FPL.team and just thought, you know what, it's probably going to be all right. It's still kind of achingly short of differentials apart from Watkins, though. So if you throw Watkins and Son in, hopefully if those two go off, then my rank goes off as well. And that's what's going to change things. It is what it is. And obviously Captain Haaland.
Yeah, being completely objective about it, this, with Son in it as well, especially, I think this looks like a really good side for the game weeks ahead and for this immediate game week as well, especially with Son, with that Spurs player added. I think it looks fantastic and it solves the Foden issue down the line when he inevitably gets benched again at random. So I also think Son's ownership is going to remain fairly low. I don't think it's going to be that high, because at 9.1 now, there's only two players really in most people's midfields that he could go for directly. You're in the position where you've got a bit of money in the bank. And I'm assuming you've got enough that you're not worried about getting priced out in the next 2 weeks.
No, nowhere near.
Okay, cool. So yeah, in that case, being able to do that luxury of Foden up to Son this week feels like a real feather in your cap. And I don't think many people are going to be able, or as many as you think, are going to be able to get to Son, especially if they've already got Madison. I think because I've got Madison,
people are going to think, it's fine.
Exactly. So that could be quite a good differential for you. And then you've got him ahead of Luton in game week 8 as well. So I think it's looking like a really good side at the moment. Estupiñán, probably not ideal away at Man United, but you back him for an attacking return. And it's one of those games that I can see it being, like you mentioned in the bold claims, quite a balmy, crazy game. And that could go in anyway. That could also mean that Man United just completely stutter. And who knows? Like, Estupiñán was 2-3 minutes away from keeping a clean sheet against Newcastle. So it could happen. And I don't hate it. My team is very, very similar, obviously, with a couple of caveats. So I do have a doggy, so I'm starting him over Estupiñán at the moment because it is Sheffield United at home. Estupiñán, I don't think it's a bad option whatsoever, but I don't think he makes it in ahead of anyone I've got in my defence or in my squad at the moment. Possibly an argument to say against Saliba with very little attacking upside, he could be better, but I think you back the clean sheet in that instance. And I think Everton represents a good enough chance of a clean sheet that I prefer him. And then in the middle, I've got Madison already in situ instead of Mbeumo in your side. Now, Mbeumo is a player that I feel like I'm going to have to correct sooner rather than later because he just keeps going off. His underlying data is still good. He seems to be getting at least one huge chance per match. And he actually missed a huge chance in game week 4 as well. And he did the same, I think, in game week 2 before obviously netting as well. So he is a player that's continuously getting into those positions. I think I need to correct it. But looking at my side, I don't think this is the week to do it. When he's going up against Newcastle and you've got the likes of Foden, Madison, Sterling, Saka and Rashford across the middle, I don't think any of them are easy sells right now. So I think I'm probably, hopefully, aiming to roll this week, which is tough to do in an international break. But if injuries are on my side, or I only get one maybe light injury and Estupiñán needs to come in, then it's not the end of the world. I think I'll be making two moves in game week 6. So I'd rather roll this week and save that up, lock and load it, and try and get Mbeumo in for, I think it's Everton in game week 6. Yes. I do want him for that game and then the next game week 7 is a pretty decent one as well. So yeah, I think for now, hopefully rolling, but I've got a couple of moves to make in a couple of weeks too.
Awesome. I think that will do for this week.
Fantastic. Well, I hope you all enjoyed this podcast and I hope you all have a fantastic international break as well. We might be able to catch up with you before game week 5 kicks off. And if we don't in the form of a podcast, we will certainly be on X all week long as well. So do have a chat to us on there if you see us posting anything there. And obviously do post your bold claims on there as well when we put up the question as well. So hopefully we can score some points there. In the meantime, though, thank you all so much for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. As always, you can find us on X at WGTA_FPL or myself at FPL Pricey. And on Instagram and Threads, it's WGTA.FPL. I, again, am just FPL Pricey. And then if you enjoyed the pods, please, if you could do one or preferably all of the following, including following us on those social channels I mentioned and giving the pod a 5-star rating on Spotify or iTunes, wherever you're listening. And then finally, if you're tuning in on YouTube, if you could give us a like and subscribe to the channel just so you don't miss out on any future content, that would be absolutely fantastic as well. It really does help get the pod out there. Now, finally, I didn't mention it at the top of the pod, or if I did, it was very brief, but we've still got the mini league open. So that final push is coming. We'll probably lock it quite soon. So if you're not in already, that code is MINLUD. But that is all from me for now.
Brilliant. Well, thanks, Sam. That's your last pod for actually 3 calendar weeks, I think, because you're off on Hull's next pod, right?
Yeah.
Quite a while. But yes, I'll be joined by a returning co-host, Nick, next time, co-founder of Who Got the Assist. Longer-term listeners, I'm sure, will be thrilled to hear from him. Unless there's a big injury in the international break, as Sam mentioned, maybe we'll be back earlier. Who knows? I think you're off on next Wednesday, aren't you? So maybe if there is a big thing that happens, we may kind of do an emergency pod next Monday. If there's something that happens after that, then I'll like you solo one kind of Wednesday or Thursday. But hopefully we can have a bit of a break. We hope we assist you this week. Let's see if a wild card does actually get wielded by either of us. It doesn't sound like it's going to happen, does it really? I'm off to play Starfield for 2 weeks. So have a great international break and we'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.